So gas prices are averaging just under $2.80 a gallon for regular. And we all know what happened to our natural gas costs this winter when things went sky high. And we all recall the 3 as the first digit in our gas prices last summer after the Katrina crisis. And this is on our minds a lot because it means your bottom line is being affected. Every time you got to go in and fill up that tank, it's more, it's more. It's $40, it's $45, it's $50. Big time impact on everybody. Well, I've invited my friend Joel McCower back on the show today to talk about energy and not just the energy we're using in our cars, but also in our homes and our businesses and all across the country. Joel writes about clean energy and clean technology and green marketing and corporate environmental strategy and all sorts of things related to that on his own website. And I thought I'd have him back on here today to talk not only about those things, but also about a little movie that he has produced, which I had up as the picture of the day yesterday on my website, harrisonline.com. Joel, welcome back to KMOX.
Hello there, Paul.
So tell us a little bit about Renew US.
Well, Renew US is a little campaign we launched this week to try and get millions of Americans to all start doing some things ourselves around climate change, but things that we can do to help not just do things in our home, but things that we can help to move markets, to change the system in positive ways, in ways that not only make us more energy independent, but also reduce climate change and create jobs all over America.
You know, last week I was talking about whether people would respond to a national call to sacrifice just a little bit if the president, or if they don't like the president, the political leader who they do respect, if there is such a thing, if there were a call to all of us to do something about this as our patriotic duty. And I heard from a lot of people who said, you know what, I'm going to do what's good for me. But if I were going to try to do something, I would also want to know that America's corporations and our leaders, our politicians and our government were also making some sort of sacrifice.
Well, that's exactly right. And I think one of the things that frustrates me a little bit is that, and I don't want to knock the environmental groups, they're good folks trying to change the world in some good ways. But, you know, the tips they have this Earth Day week, you know, Earth Day is on Sunday or Saturday, I guess, that, you know, tell us things we can do. You know, they're good things like, you know, swap out our light bulbs for compact fluorescents and go buy a hybrid and things like that. But it means that it's all up to us, the individual consumers, and that's partly true, but that's not the whole story. We need to get the corporations and we need to get our government leaders on this bandwagon too.
All right, so how do we do that? How can you accomplish that? Does it have to start with us and expand to them, or the other way around?
Well, I think it's both. I mean, there is a lot going on the corporate side where companies are starting to see that there are big markets for renewable energy, and they're slow to grow, but they are growing. So that's happening, but they're not growing fast enough. And the reason is that we're not getting any leadership on this. We could be, as you suggest, with some political leadership, and to be honest, not much sacrifice at all. Energy independent by taking some actions if we demand it, and if we start asking for it at the pump, if we start asking for it at the ballot box, if we start, you know, asking for it in all the different ways that we interact with our world as consumers, employees, you know, investors and things like that.
Now, when you talk about energy independence and the consumers having to make a certain move in that direction, there's a lot of talk about ethanol, particularly here in the Midwest, because so much corn is grown here and because of the mandates that our gas has to be 10% ethanol. That tends to increase the price. I mean, there are tax breaks that help keep the cost of ethanol down, but isn't ethanol now more expensive than gasoline is?
Actually, that's not true. And in fact, during Katrina, ethanol was about 40 to 60 cents per gallon less because of when the price of oil shot up. I think, you know, one of the things that just galls me the most is when, you know, the government or whomever say, well, you know, these things are not viable without government subsidies. Well, yeah, but what about the government subsidies that we're giving to the oil companies and the coal companies and the natural gas companies and especially the nuclear power companies? They are billions, probably trillions of dollars over time, and nobody seems to be complaining about that. And so what about some subsidies to help grow bioenergy crops on American soil to make fuels for our vehicles? I mean, that sounds like a pretty good investment to me.
And that would have to be something that would start, again, with some sort of impact from the government, you think?
Well, I think it's you know, everybody has to get involved. We have to be involved as consumers. We have to, you know, buy flex fuel vehicles. There'll be, you know, about almost a million of them sold this year, but most people don't have any ability to fuel up. There's only 600 ethanol gas pumps in the country out of 190,000.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about E85 vehicles. I talked with a woman the other day who bought one and found that there are only two E85 gas stations here in the St. Louis area.
Well, I'll tell you this. There are only two E85 gas stations in all of California. You know, so you got it pretty good.
Yeah.
I guess. No, but that's what we need. You know, so we have to buy the cars. We have to get the infrastructure going. So it means we have to ask the oil, what are now called the oil companies, the Shells and Chevrons and Exxon, to have those pumps so that we can go fill up. You know, if you think about how many stations you go into that have diesel pumps. If relative to the number of diesel vehicles out there, it's actually, if we had the same ratio as to cars on the road today, the 4 million cars on the road today that run on E85, we'd probably have 6,000 or maybe even 60,000 instead of just 600.
Is it too early in the terms of this technology to decide whether it's going to go or not? Because I can certainly remember the electric car. There was a lot of buzz about that, but as far as I know, only members of Ed Begley Jr.'s family bought the electric car, and so there is no such thing as the electric car anymore.
Pretty much, yeah. Well, you know, a lot of those cars, you know, now we have the hybrid electric cars, the Priuses and Civics and others, and those are going pretty well, and people are pretty excited about those, and they can't, you know, they're flying off the dealer's lots. And so there's a hunger out there for cars that work, and so the lesson there is that people want to be able to use cars the way they always did, where they fill it up, where it gives them the kind of horsepower and time between fill-ups, the range, and things like that they've always had. The electric cars didn't do that. They don't work in cold weather. And what we're finding is that, you know, E85 does work, so that's a very viable future. Here's what excites me about E85, is that it's the first good story that U.S. automobile manufacturers have had to tell on the environmental front probably ever, that they are ahead of the Japanese, they're ahead of the Germans in producing E85 vehicles, and they are just realizing that that's a real advantage to them, and they're now starting, as you saw from the Live Green, Go Yellow ads that GM's been running ever since the Super Bowl, this is a really exciting thing for them. And for us, frankly.
But is it cost prohibitive? That I think, is the bottom line. As I talk to people about these issues and things related to gas prices and those sort of things, people tell me, yeah, I know those things are out there, but there's $5,000 or $6,000 in extra cost in buying the vehicle, and I don't know how long it's going to take me to recoup my expenses. And also, I see that Honda and Nissan have now joined both GM and Ford in cutting back their production of hybrid SUVs because the market isn't there.
Well, the market for SUVs is dropping, but that price premium is true for hybrid electric vehicles. But for ethanol or E85 flex fuel vehicles, as they're called, the cost difference is only $100 or so. So it's almost, it's noise, it's insignificant. So I think that's one of the, you know, this is just a step in the right direction, because here's how it goes. You're making ethanol from corn, which is not very efficient, but the next step is to make ethanol from plant matters or the rest of the corn stalk besides the corn, and from special bioenergy crops. That's the next step. So it's called cellulosic ethanol, if you want to get technical about it. And then you put that into a hybrid vehicle. So now you're running it on only 15% oil, 85% ethanol, in a vehicle that has an electric motor, and all of a sudden you're getting 200-400 miles per gallon on your vehicle. And then there's one last step, because now there's this move towards plug-in hybrids, where you plug them in at home if you want to extend the battery life, so you can get even more battery power and use less gasoline. And when you have a plug-in flex fuel hybrid vehicle, you literally, Paul, could be getting 700 to 1,000 miles per gallon of oil.
And how much more expensive is that vehicle?
Well, I don't know. That's the question. I mean, that hybrids are a little more expensive. Flex fuel vehicles aren't that much more expensive. We don't really have them yet, so they don't exist. But the point is that these are all technologies we have. So where's the leadership? Where are the politicians? Where are the oil companies and the car companies? You know, getting on this, saying we now have found a way to reduce our climate impacts, to be energy independent, to create U.S. jobs, create not only energy security but improve our national security, and you know, pretty much have everything we want here. Oh, and by the way, reinvigorate the U.S. car industry.
And I think our economy would certainly benefit from that as well. But you don't consider the president saying in his State of the Union address that we are addicted to oil and that we need to look into using corn and, what was the other thing he mentioned, switchgrass.
I don't even know
what that is.
Well, that's one of the ways you make, you know, cellulosic ethanol. I mean, we were very excited that he talked about cellulosic ethanol and was actually able to pronounce it more accurately than he typically does nuclear. But, you know, what's he doing about it beyond talk? That's the big question.
What would you like him to do?
Well,
would you like the President of the United States to go on TV and say, here's where we're taking us, you know, like Kennedy did with going to the moon? Do you want that to be our national mandate from this president when it comes to getting us off of oil?
Well, it sure would. Yeah, it would make me very happy. Yes. I mean, the president saying we have a crisis here. Yes, we're addicted to oil. Now, how are we going to do this? We have a plan to get ourselves basically petroleum free, at least for automobiles, within 5 or 10 years. You know what? Brazil's done it. Brazil is making almost all their cars, 70-80% of them, are flex fuel vehicles running off of ethanol made from sugarcane in their case. And they are going to be energy independent next year. Brazil, which has always been called, you know, derisively, a country of the future and always will be, you know, actually is a country of the future. They've actually created a very positive future for themselves.
And they do it with sugarcane because they are the world's largest producer of sugarcane. But when you say energy independent, does that mean they are importing no oil?
They're going to be, I think, a net energy exporter. They may be importing some oil, but they're going to be exporting ethanol. And they're basically going to be energy independent.
How long did it take them to do that?
Well, they've been working on it. I don't know when this started. It may have been 10 years, but part of it was they had national leadership, and the national leadership was able to get industry, and you know, the farmers and the automobile industry and the fueling industry, the, you know, what we call gas stations, on board, and they have to create. It's a whole system. It's not any one of those problems, and then of course get the consumers to buy them. You know, but that kind of thing takes leadership. It takes you know, leadership at the top. It takes a congressional. It takes, you know, we're getting some of that in the states. Some states like mine in California and Governor Pataki in New York and the governor, I can't remember his name, in Texas are actually seeing ethanol as a great way to stimulate the economy and reduce greenhouse gases and all that good stuff. And they're starting to embark on that. But you can't do it. You know, 50 pieces, you got to do it. It's a national system, just like our interstate highways and everything else.
Joel, I'd like to ask you to hold on for another segment and include some phone calls when we come back, if you can do that.
Sure.
I also want to talk to you about having Dan Rather at your house.
Okay.
Joel McCower is a writer, speaker, consultant on corporate environmental strategy and clean technology and green marketing. He's also produced what he calls a climate movie with a happy ending, a little four-minute movie that kind of fast-forwards you to the year 2056, when people might be looking back on this year, the year 2006, as the year that we got fed up and finally decided to do something ourselves and push our corporations and our government to do something about this as well. That is available on my website, harrisonline.com. And we're back in just a moment here at 314-436-7900 and toll-free 800-925-1120. This is KMOX. Talking to Joel McCower, who speaks and writes and blogs about clean energy and renewable energy. Put out a four-minute flash movie yesterday that is moving around the internet and starting up, you know, slowly as a viral video. A movie he put together that he calls the first climate movie with a happy ending. And I've got a link to it on my website, harrisonline.com. And we're talking about renewable energy. Does renewable energy mean things that we can grow? Is that the only source of renewable energy?
Well, it means things that rely on the Earth's natural system. So the sunlight, the energy that comes from sunlight, energy that comes from the Earth, it's called geothermal energy, energy that comes from the wind, energy that comes from plant matter, like biofuels, as we were talking about before,
mm-hmm.
even energy that comes from the tides or the waves, or even from rivers, even down the Mississippi, it's called tidal power. You can harness that.
I got an email from a listener, and we're going to get some emails and phone calls and mix them in here as well. He says that E85 ethanol is currently about the same price as gasoline, or in some cases about a dime less, but according to the EPA MPG ratings, E85 yields only 70 to 75% of the miles per gallon as gasoline, which is why it costs more per mile. And he also says that cellulose ethanol production is still experimental. There's none being produced commercially because the corn growers' lobby is too entrenched and they like the way it is now. Any reply to that?
Well, he's definitely right on the first count. You get lower miles per gallon on ethanol than with gasoline, and that's just something that we're going to have to work on, and it's something that it comes out about the same. It's a little bit cheaper, but you get a little bit lower miles per gallon of fuel, and that basically means you have to fill up a little bit more often. But, you know, if we're talking about things that we can doing to change the system, it's not the worst thing in the world. And he's right that cellulosic ethanol is just R&D. It's an experimental thing right now, although there are a dozen or two companies that are trying hard to find ways to make that commercially viable. It's not being the corn growers are definitely causing the subsidies to be there for corn and not for other things, and that's just a battle. Everyone has their self-interest, nothing new there.
Sounds to me on both of these fronts that we're still in the early days and we just need to work on it and make it work better. You know, if you looked back at a personal computer, the first one that they brought out for you to be able to use in your home, compare that to what we have now, the cost and the power and the memory and all of that stuff, there would be no comparison.
We won't even talk about the inconveniences of swapping disks, so... All of a sudden, the inconveniences of filling up, you know, once every 4 days instead of once every 5 days or whatever it is, isn't a big deal.
Yeah, I remember the days of logging on at 300 baud.
Oh.
You know, now we're doing it at DSL speeds,
right,
so we can watch movies like yours live as they stream. Jim, you're on KMOX. Say hi to Joel.
Hi, Joel. Very interesting subject. I'm an engineer by trade, but this whole thing with ethanol is fascinating. I think you could almost, there's two things I'd like to say. Number one, you could say you could start at the local level. Missouri, or the county could state, because they issue permits for all the gas stations going up into St. Louis County, could say, hey, you've got to have an E85 pump at one of your, at your new station. Maybe just one. I look at, when I go fill up, you have three different grades of gas. But you need three different. I mean, I've never used anything above the 86 or 87 octane. Number two, Missouri and Illinois and Iowa could get together as a co-op. We have the largest river trade of corn. Corn goes up and down this river out in front of me every day. I mean, you could put ethanol plants up and down the river, and then we could sell it into the state of Missouri and into Illinois, but use it as a co-op and say, hey, we'll all share in this.
Joel, what does it take to make those things happen?
Oh, it takes money. It takes money. Money often takes some kinds of tax incentives, just like they have incentives to build nuclear plants and coal plants. We need more incentives to build refineries that you can make fuel out of corn or someday, you know, the corn stalks, you know, not the actual food part.
Could I make another point?
Yes.
The other point is, well, think about it. Even though, let's say, you only get 75% of the mile per gallon, the money stays in the United States. When you manufacture ethanol, it goes to the farmer. It doesn't go overseas. So
right.
The balance of trade is, to me, it offsets it.
And it, you know, you're, because you're paying for that, you know, in many other ways through your taxes, not to mention through the lives of American soldiers, and it's also less polluting. It causes less pollution that creates asthma and all kinds of other respiratory diseases. So there are other benefits. You know, it's just, yeah, okay, you got to fill up a little bit more often.
All right, thanks, Jim. I'm glad you called. 314-436-7900 and toll-free 800-925-1120. Paul, you're on KMOX. Say hi to Joel McCower.
Hey, Joel. Hey, Paul. Hey, I just wanted to say, you know, I saw Jane Fonda on Letterman last night, and I remember 30 years ago her tying herself to nuclear power reactors, trying to protest the proliferation of nuclear power plants. And my dad, who worked for Exxon at that time, was going to move our family out to the Northwest because Exxon, which I know is a dirty word to your guests and even to you to a certain degree, Paul, actually was going to proliferate the nuclear power plants all across the country, which, if that would have happened, would have reduced our carbon and our ozone and all that in the atmosphere. But yet, you know, it's the same group that protested that then who are protesting so many things that are going on now, which leads me to a point about how I think they don't see the forest from the trees. I mean, all these things, if you're burning corn into ethanol or whatever, or even battery-powered cars are using coal electricity that's carbon in the air, and it just always, I don't want to say laughable, because I know the people who are for the environment, their heart's in the right place, but I think they just don't get the reality of the situation, and a lot of the things they do end up furthering the problem. Case in point, we don't have nuclear power plants in this country.
All right, I'll let Joel reply. Go ahead.
Well, I think the biggest reply is that you can't turn a corn cob into a nuclear weapon. So it's a little bit different to compare a biorefinery to a nuclear power plant. And, you know, there are some real concerns there about nuclear energy, and a lot of people don't want them in their neighborhoods. You know, the China Syndrome, that was the movie that Jane Fonda made, whether you liked it or not, you know, which was about what happens when, a nuclear power plant melts down and goes through the earth and comes out in China, I guess was the reference. The China Syndrome today is that China is sucking up all the oil and all the energy, and we have to be, they're going to be building nuclear power plants, but more important, they're going to be sending pollution up into the air that's not only going to cause climate change to all of us, but it's also going to be sending pollution to the West Coast and even the Midwest of the United States just because of the jet stream. So we've got huge issues, and we need to find cleaner ways to make fuel. Maybe nuclear is part of it, but we also need to be looking at things that nature creates, like biofuels.
All right, let me take one more call for Joel McCower. Here is Scott on KMOX. Hello.
Thank you very much for taking my call. What an interesting subject. I have two questions I'd like to ask. Number one, NASA created a product called aerogel, which on one side you can put a map gas torch to it, and you can put your hand up against the material, and you can't feel the heat. Why isn't that being developed to help energy efficiency in homes in other places? And secondly, why isn't the government offering incentives to go ahead for consumers to have higher energy efficient homes and automobiles and everything else, and also business? Why aren't they doing that?
Well, why indeed? Those are both really good questions. I mean, there are, aerogel is an example of one of, oh, I have to say at this point, 100, maybe 200 really interesting and commercially viable, potentially commercially viable clean technology products that could insulate our homes, make our cars less polluting, make buildings in general, which is one of the biggest users of energy, far more energy efficient. Would, you know, just things like if you take an industry, and you know you've got plenty of it where you are, motors and compressors and boilers, those things that run energy. We have better versions of all of those, but they take it, you know, people don't want to buy them, companies don't want to invest, just like you don't want to necessarily invest in a new car because there's no incentive to do that. Government, when they want to create markets, when they want to change behavior, they create incentives. That's why we all get more deductions on our home mortgages, because they want to incentivize home ownership. What are they going to do? What are we going to do to help them, you know, understand that we want incentives to create a cleaner future for our kids?
All right, thanks for calling. Joel's got to run here, but I got to ask you one more quick question here.
Sure.
And we'll have to get to the Dan Rather story some other time, although you think maybe the 60 Minutes piece is going to run this Sunday, Joel?
I think not at this point. There's a piece actually on biofuels for which I was interviewed, spent some time with Dan. It was pretty interesting, and it's probably going to run, if not this Sunday, in the next couple of Sundays.
All right, we'll keep an eye out for that, and people will actually get to see you on camera at that point instead of just hearing you on this show. But the other part of this is you have consulted with major corporations in this country, including our friends at the brewery here in town, on how being environmentally green can help them make green, how being using clean technologies can actually accrue to their own bottom line. Is there anything happening in that side of the equation when it comes to renewable energies like this that we're talking about in corporate America?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, one of the companies that I've been working with for a little over a year now is General Electric. GE is now the largest manufacturer of wind turbines in the country, the largest manufacturer of solar panels. They also make the world's most energy-efficient aircraft engine, the world's most energy-efficient locomotive engine, and other things like that. So they realize that their future profitability is related to helping their customers, which are airlines and locomotives and as well as homeowners, be cleaner and more efficient. So that's just one example. There's a lot of companies doing lots of things, and we can talk about that some other time, too.
All right. I appreciate your time today, Joel. Thanks very much.
Always a pleasure, Paul. Be well.
Joel McCower, you can find him, find his blog online at readjoel.com. You can see the movie that he produced, a little four-minute flash movie about if it were the year 2056, could we look back at this year of 2006 as the year that we all decided, you know what, we're fed up with this. We need to do something about it. And that could be the thing that sparks it. Maybe it'll take a little online community action to make it get there.